From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe.
With courage, let us all combine. This has been the theme for Refugee Week in Australia since 2015. It's a phrase taken from the second verse of the Australian National Anthem. And the chances are, when you've sung this line before, perhaps at a school event or even a sporting match, you probably haven't been thinking necessarily about refugees. But recently, when I reread the words of this second verse, I couldn't help but think of the people who've come to Australia to seek asylum. For those who've come across the seas, we've boundless plains to share, it reads. I sometimes say to my wife, not if you come by boat. It's a real jolt to the system, especially considering the Australian government's immigration policy of recent years and the attitudes of some Australian politicians towards refugees and asylum seekers.
But then there are also initiatives like Refugee Week and so many people in the Australian community who not only refuse to get on board with these really harsh policies and a hard stance against refugees and asylum seekers, but they're actually doing something about it. They're uniting with refugees and asylum seekers, not only helping them, but acknowledging that they contribute knowledge, skills and culture to the fabric of Australian society. So they are essentially welcoming all people from all nations who are seeking a new home. And when I hear about this, it sounds familiar. You know, I can't help but be reminded of what the Bible says about welcoming the stranger or the foreigner. I mean, the Israelites are repeatedly told to do this because you too were strangers in the land of Egypt. Then there's the story of the Good Samaritan, a really clear example of what it means to love your neighbour, whoever they may be, and possibly even learn from them as well.
This week, our producer Karen Tong has a story for you of what it looks like to welcome a stranger.
Yes.
Hi, this is Karen.
Hi, please come
11-7. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm walking through the foyer of an apartment building in Western Sydney, where Dawood and Sara live. That's not their real names. They've asked me to use their nicknames for privacy and safety reasons.
Going up.
Dawood and Sara are married. They have two kids, and they're asylum seekers. They arrived in Australia 4 years ago and are still undergoing the arduous process of applying for protection in Australia.
This is Dawood from Iran and my wife.
Hi, my name is Sara. We live in Australia.
As I'm setting up for the interview, Dawood and Sara bring out a fruit platter they've prepared for my visit. There are plums and oranges, mandarins and persimmons. Later, I'll realise that this was only the beginning. Tea and coffee, a delicious creme caramel cake that Sara baked the night before, and a bowl of dates coated in coconut will arrive at the table a little later. While this is all happening, Dawood leans towards me, lowers his voice a little, and says there are some things he doesn't want to talk about because he doesn't want to remember them and he doesn't want his wife to remember them either.
It was very difficult. We were on the ocean on the small boat, 80 or 90 people, for more than 4 days. 5 days? Yes, 5 days almost. And just we were praying God every hours, every minute. It's a really bad memory.
So I start off by asking them about Australia, what they had heard about this country before they arrived.
Yeah, just we knew it's a very calm country, peace country. Maybe it's because of very far from everywhere, from the world. And the second, it's the multicultural country. And more important for ladies, the government protect them very much. Not like Middle East or not like my country. And most of the ladies and kids are very free here.
Oh
yeah, she said one of the important things here we can choose the religious or we live without any religious and this is a free country and safe.
Why was that important for you to be able to have the freedom to choose your religion?
When you are in limited country, district country, You are not free to wear what you like or to choose your friends, to choose your religious. So suddenly, you know, you like to go somewhere, it's very, very free, so more easy and good for us. Especially when you have a problem in your own country with government, your opinion is not inside of your government. And it's nothing maybe, but for them it's many things.
This Australia that they had conjured in their minds, I wondered if it was the same as the Australia they now found themselves living in.
Yeah, actually, it's really what we thought about that, exactly is that same one. But the problem is, I don't know, it's better I say or not, the new policy.
I can tell it's difficult for Dawood to express how he feels, because for the most part, everything is great and just how they imagined. There's freedom and opportunity. More than 70%, even 80%, he tells me several times, is all right. But I also want to hear him talk about the other not so good 20%.
The Australian country, this Australian name is very big in this world. You know, for everyone is good country to live. But so it is too. What I thought is correct, but the new policy for the asylum seeker and refugee make crazy some of the refugees and asylum seekers like us. It means we get temporary visa every few months. It means we can't study, we can't get a good job, and they can't go to the TAFE or uni. So this is very difficult, and I haven't think about that really before. The life became for us just as repeatedly every day, same as yesterday. Just we are waiting for a long time, and we have to wait again 1 or 2 or 3 years more. That's why really we don't know what to do. No motivation and no visas. It's quite difficult. Anyways, it's not a good chance for us now.
How does that sort of make you feel?
So I feel very bad because it's wasting time and life.
Before I leave their house, Dawood will tell me there's one more thing he finds really hard. I've already packed away my mic and recorder, so I don't get this on tape. But he says this thing happens whenever he receives a letter from the government or has to speak to a Department of Immigration officer on the phone. The thing is, they never use his name, his real name. They always call him by his number, like, hello, 005. What is the purpose of your call, 005? We have a few questions to ask you, 005. That's not his real number, of course, just a random number he used when he tried to explain to me how it feels to be a number. Why don't they just use my name? Dawood asks me. And I don't have an answer.
So I've known Dawood and Sarah for over 2 years through a Bible study group that we both attend.
This is Joanne. She's a cross-cultural worker at a church in Sydney, and she's the one who introduced me to Dawood and Sarah. And she says that it's not just the number that bothers them. It's also being categorised as an asylum seeker or refugee.
I've really gained so much from their friendship and come to appreciate so much about their rich culture and their background and just who they are as people, not just as refugees or asylum seekers. They're so much more than that label. They really want to leave behind that, you know, asylum seeker label, refugee. They want to be serving and giving back to the community and contributing and helping others.
Many good Christian people, as Dawood describes them, have helped Dawood and Sarah settle into their new lives. They picked them up and drove them to church. They took them to the supermarket when they needed to buy food. They sat with them through countless visa interviews and appointments. They taught them English, and they did not treat them like asylum seekers. They treated them like people. And they didn't pressure Dawood and Sarah to become Christians, but because of the welcome they received, they actually did decide to become Christians too.
We born Muslim, and Islam was our religious from the when we born, but we didn't choose ourselves religious. That's why sometimes the people want to choose by themselves. So in Iran, it's quite difficult and dangerous if the government find out that you change your religious.
Actually, one of their first encounters with Christianity happened in Iran. Davud had an Iranian friend who was married to a Korean woman, and this couple attended a Korean church in Tehran. Davud tagged along a few times, but he never had any intention of being or becoming a Christian. He was really only there to spend time with his friend. But after moving to Australia, they saw Christianity differently, somehow. It was close, it was real, and they couldn't help but take notice.
Really, year after many years, we saw some people with love, really, and good humanity. We think really about the peoples here and their help, really. Say we thanks God that the God sent some people like John to us to care about us.
And was that quite different for you to see that?
It's from earth to sky, it's much different.
اونجا ترس از خدا داشتیم تو دین اسلام.
She said, when I was in Iran, always we afraid the God. We find out that the God is really, if you do not do this, if you do not do that, if you don't pray, if you don't if you don't go every Friday to pray, it will kill you or you have to go to the fire. But when we came here and we knew some Christian people and also Bible, we knew it's really peace and God is not what we thought about that. Yes, you say in Christianity we saw the peace and love. Love to everyone, love your neighbors, your kids, your family, your friends. First, love God. We never were living in peace before our previous life, but here we find out in Christianity is not, as she said, is not religious, is humanity, is love and peace.
For Davud and Sara, their Christian friends and Christian faith, it's part of the 70-80% of good in daily Australian life. And at least some of the time, it makes the other 20-odd percent bearable.
Of course, now our life has changed. I had stress and I was depressed before, but not anymore now.
Mr. Parandaha, bashid ke na be fikre
fardash. You say, we gave ourselves to God, the God can decide about us. And as he say, you can be like a bird, free, and don't think about many problems. It will solve if you pray.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. Justine, you've been thinking about this and writing about it. The classic kind of refugee story. These are what you might call the resolve stories. You know, the hero goes from stateless, persecuted outsider to welcomed, included citizen, always successful. They then end up extolling the virtues of the host nation and are profoundly grateful for the opportunities it's afforded them. And they declare their intentions to give back to the country that's nursed them through this difficulty. What's wrong with that kind of picture?
I don't know about it being so much wrong as unfair. It just feels to me that it sets up this logic where refugees are expected to prove that they weren't a bad investment. So in other words, do we expect them to prove their worth? You know, do we expect them to become a success story in time?
Education is right there within your reach. Things that we take it for granted is right there in front of me. So I reach onto it. And I'm just keep going with it because I think that's the only way that I can transform myself as individual and transform my mind. So I am very blessed, I'm very lucky, and I'm in a lucky country, and I can do the best for this country and nothing else.
This is Deng Phiak Adut. You know, he's gone from a child soldier to a lawyer. And, you know, everyone wants to hear this story and everyone wants to celebrate it. And I have no beef with that. But I do wonder if it really does install that expectation that the welcome that has been given to them will be paid back in spades.
And only if they've become this spectacular success rather than just a normal person living their life in the community.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Refugee Week, I applaud it. You know, they want to very explicitly highlight the, quote, positive contribution, end quote, that refugees make to Australian society. So they're deliberately going about doing that. And possibly and probably with a view to kind of shift the public sentiment towards refugees. But it does kind of boil down to quite a cold logic. You know, we should invest in others because it will pay off.
Yes, and I wonder, though, if you get to know refugees, actually, whether that's how they feel.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. But then I also remember reading a story in The Guardian. Dina Nayeri, who's an Iranian novelist who went to the United States as a refugee, she wrote in very blistering language about the complex feeling that she has towards her host nation. Because on the one hand, she's so grateful for all the opportunities it's given her, but she also feels really angry that she feels this constant pressure to perform and to prove herself over and over again.
So her feeling is that, yeah, okay, I'm grateful, but do I have to spend the rest of my life showing just how grateful I am?
Yeah. I mean, this is an extract from her article. She says, despite a lifetime spent striving to fulfill my own potential, of trying to prove that the West is better for having known me, I cannot accept this way of thinking, this separation of the worthy exile from the unworthy. It's kind of really, it's hard, right, to hear it in that language. But then she also acknowledges how deeply she's internalised this need to be grateful. She talks about how when she's at JFK Airport being welcomed back into the country, she feels this urge boil up within her to sort of bow before the immigration officials because they've welcomed her back into the nation.
Whereas others will just turn up thinking, well, I'm home and you should welcome me in here, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's a clue because, you know, you've just said, I'm home, you should welcome me. Well, in the sort of thing that Dina Nayeri is talking about, there's a very clear host and guest relationship. And the refugee in this vein is always going to be the guest, and they have to prove that they can still be a guest by always showing what a contribution they've made to the nation. I think what's really powerful in what she writes is that she's forcing us to see the refugee as an equal, not just this object of our charity, of our benevolence, but someone who deserves the same life chances that we have just simply because we are human and they are human. They deserve the same shot as well.
Yes, this is a complicated dynamic. Is there a way of overcoming that host-guest situation?
I always go back to the parable of the Good Samaritan that Jesus talks about. The main point of that parable is that true neighbourliness knows no boundaries. It doesn't know any boundaries of race, religion, ethnicity, and so on. But I think also what the parable is getting at is that you need to be able to learn from the other person, right? So the teacher who initially posed this question to Jesus has to learn from the character in the story that he hated, right? Who would have been the best neighbor because he doesn't bother about differences. That teacher has something to learn from his enemy in some ways. And so while, you know, refugees aren't our enemy, don't hear me say that, but it's this idea that hosts have always something to learn from their guests, and that relationship will always remain unequal unless we can be open to some sort of transforming encounter with difference, with people who are different from us. So when it comes to refugees, it's not simply about letting them into the country and having them earn their way into our good graces. It's about recognising them as our equal and giving them their place in our hearts and lives.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Simon Smart and Justine Toe. Dawood and Sara are just two of the many people seeking asylum in Australia who felt the welcome of their local church community as they seek to build a new life here.
For the full interview with Dawood and Sara, head to our website, publicchristianity.org. Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. While you're there, feel free to hit subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. And please leave us a rating or review. It helps other people discover our podcast.
Next week, a Pulitzer Prize-winning author on the beauty and tragedy of being an exceptional human.